You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan.
Welcome to the Catechism Hour with me, Brother Justin Bunyan, and we are continuing our dig into the virtue of justice. Justice, as we've already seen, is a virtue that perfects the will. And when it's defined, it ends up being one which is constant and perpetual to render each its due. And that's where we are today. We're going to be looking at what it is. And what does it imply, this element of giving each its due? So when I ended last week, we were looking at the question of justice, and I said we were going to touch on the question of adultery. And adultery comes from the following fact. Marriage is for the common good. It's a common good between two. And it's established through a total and mutual self-giving. And that's why, precisely, one flesh unites two, male and female, in a total self-giving. The two establish a human and temporal good that even transcends themselves. So, the single good, which they both share, is ordered for a public good. And that's why justice comes in, because it's a good to give each its due. What is these two who have become one, what is their due? It gives them rights. And she and he both receive an exclusivity over the rights of the other. She has an irrevocable gift of himself as he is irrevocably given to her. So this irrevocability, this ability of giving of oneself, do we see where adultery would come in and shatter this whole edifice? So adultery on the part of the male involves taking what is rightfully hers and giving it to another who has no rights. Adultery on the part of the female involves taking what's rightfully his and surrendering it to someone who has no rights. So therefore, adultery is the violation of the institution of marriage, in that it treats what is irrevocably given to become revocable. Adultery is, at the same time, an injustice against the common good, the good of civil community as a whole, for the family grounded in marriage is the most important condition that enables an individual to achieve personal wholeness. Do we see how much evil there is involved in there and how much this would offend God? As it all acts that are unjust against the common good, The adulterer wills to benefit for himself or herself at the expense of the greater good of the public welfare. For the person's infidelity harms the children of the marriage, whether they are actually born or possibilities. For infidelity harms the spouses and their relationships, the health of which is critical and is a critical factor in both the physical, emotional, and spiritual welfare of those children who are or to be. Infidelity hurts the very cause of marriage, and the health of society depends on the health of marriage. So we see how much this is and how important this is. What's interesting is that someone may say, but I only broke the sixth, or I only broke the ninth commandment. And we see how all commandments are interconnected, and how through justice, through prudence, through temperance and fortitude, all of those questions come in and out and are all intertwined. And if we see that, then truly we can begin to make that step forward, that looking out further than ourselves. I remember hearing once in a homily that someone, a priest was speaking, he was saying he was talking with a group of adults. They weren't young adults, they were adults. And the person says, but I follow the Ten Commandments. And he goes, excellent. That makes you a good Jew, but not a Christian. Because to be Christian is far more. Our Lord broke open the constraints, and he went deeper where they had figured out little superfuges to get around problems. He had broken those. For example, when he said that you deny your parents' subsistence by saying that you've offered it all to God. And he goes, no, that doesn't work. Charity is greater. So now let's go to our next point, which is the human person and common good. The human person, me, you, everyone, and what is common. There's a lot of talk about this. This is the basis of natural law. But we're going to dig a little bit into this one here and see where do we go with it. The common good is a human good held in common. Common goods are often confused with collectives. The two, however, are really different and need to be distinguished. An example of collective good is a meal. Each person sitting at the table acquires only a portion of the meal. It is simply not possible for every person sitting down to enjoy the whole meal simultaneously. As the number of people invited to eat increases, the individual portions available to each one decreases. Hence, the collective good is essentially a question of material. The common good, on the other hand, can be enjoyed entirely, on the whole, by any number of individual persons at the same time. An increasing number of individuals partaking in that good does not in any way diminish the good available to anyone else. For example, consider the common good of cultural literary heritage. My possession of that heritage does not diminish anyone else's ability to possess it. In fact, the more widely it is possessed, the more likely it is to be shared with others. This is not the case with a meal, or an apartment building, or a car, or a piece of land. The common good is essentially immaterial. Consider the common good of a sports team, such as a hockey team. Victory is the end intended for the whole team. Every member of the team is working in conjunction with every other member to achieve that end. To be possessed by everyone in common property or a common good. An individual scoring record, on one hand, is not a common good, but it's a private good. It belongs only to the one individual member of the team. An unselfish player loves the common good of victory over his own private good, such as his private scoring record. A selfish player loves his private good over the common good of victory. Instead of passing the puck which will create conditions that will guarantee an increase in the likelihood of victory for the whole team, he hangs on to the puck and hopes that he can add to his personal record. Even though doing so decreases the likelihood of victory for the team, which is the common good in the team, and every member can partake in it entirely. In short, a common good is better than the private good within the same category. Just as there is a common good in a hockey team, there's a common good at school. There is a common good in the civil community as a whole. The common good in the social whole that has a principal end. So, we understand that the immaterial and material, when it's a something, there's only a certain portion that any of us can take. When it's immaterial, when it's more on the line of ideals, then it's something that all of us can have at all times. A human person is the only creature in the physical universe willed into existence by God for his own sake. The human person is an intellectual creature, the individual substance of a rational nature. As such, we have two specific powers, namely the power to know and the power to will. The human person is a rational animal, and so his knowledge begins in sensation. But unlike the unrational animals, knowledge does not end there. The human person grasps the natures of things. He apprehends what they are, that they exist, and he reasons the conclusions not immediately evident in his mind. So the first point, he apprehends what they are. This would be looking at the very existence of things. This other animals don't do at all, nowhere. That they exist. The existential judgment. This is something else too. An animal doesn't have the ability, doesn't have that rational level. And lastly, to make conclusions that are not immediately evident. And that is through our desire for knowledge, through science. The intellectual knowledge is a specific kind of self-expansion. The kinds and things man knows exists in him, that is, in his mind. Knowledge is within us. For example, the knowledge of a friend or a maple tree in his front yard is real and in his mind. So it is true to say that these things exist in me in a certain way, obviously in a way that is different than the way they exist outside of me. The tree outside me exists materially. You have one tree on your front lawn, not 12. But they exist within me, immaterial. The idea of a tree and its treeness, that's where we're looking. Okay, so one thing is having it. Another thing is the archetype, the perfection. You can have a cup of coffee in front of you, which might be good, might be bad, might be mediocre. But there's only so much coffee you can have. But you can think about the perfect cup of coffee and you can perfect it. And you can have as much of that as you want because it's immaterial. Through knowledge, I become more. That is, I expand. For I am more than what I am than without knowing the thing that I know. Aristotle tells us, the intellect is in a way all things. Through our minds, we can explore everything. We can be all things. In the material world, we are hemmed in by time, space, possibilities, etc. The human person wills more to exist more fully. For all men by nature desire to know. Again, Aristotle tells us that. It exists more fully as a knower. Thus, the human person has a will. He has only apprehends intelligibles. Okay, so intelligibles. What is an intelligible? The nature of things, their existence, truth, beauty, real harmonious relationships, justice. What can we think it through? The thinking through element is the intelligible. How much of it do we think through? When we look at things, do we think about what, how it can be perfected, how it can be better, how it can be worse? And we look at our own things that we've done in our lives. Which things are we happy with? Which things are sad with? Which things are guilty with? Which things we're overjoyed with? The will makes possible another kind of self-expansion. Namely, the self-expansion that occurs through love. Not only do I know the other as a person of the same nature as myself, as another self, I can also will his good for his own sake, not merely for the sake of what he does for me. I can will his good as I will my own. In other words, I can love him as another self, another me. In knowledge, he exists in me in a certain way. In love, I can go out of myself and exist in him. Through love, I become two, three, four, depending on how many extensives are in that love. The more I become, the more I become. The reason is that the good is a property of being. Good is a property of being. We talked about this before with the question of evil. Evil is an absence. Good is a property. Good is a something. When we're evil, we're a void. We're emptiness. Whatever is good insofar as it is. The human person is brought into existence in order to know and to love. That is, in order to become more than what he is without ceasing to be what he is. Therefore, he exists. To be more fully. For his origin is in love. For God is love and God is effusive. God, who is all goodness itself, freely willed to communicate the goodness and existence that he most perfectly to things outside himself. This is the problem when we end up with the question of justice, is that we don't give each its due. We need to give each its due. So the final point of justice is God himself. God gave us ourselves. He gave us our qualities. He gave us our vocations. And in justice, we're called upon to make that flourish, to make that expand. We're called to live within love. But we choose hatred. We're called to be self-giving, and we choose self-love. We're called to be humble and to walk humbly in the hand of God, and we fall into pride. All these items click into justice. Justice is to give each its due, to give God his due. And what is his due? All. And since it's an immaterial element, we can give all, and we still have something. We have to understand the human person, because by the human person, we understand all the other elements within the human person. We are a reflection of God. And when we allow ourselves to fall into destructive behaviors, we're taking that image of God and shattering it. And it's shattered in such a manner that only through the sacrament of confession are we able to restore it. Now, how does that work for ourselves? Do we even understand it? Do we even see it? And there we have our issue. We'll look at, like, for example, let's look at different writers. And they talk about the human person. The just man. What is a just man? A just man is one who gives each its due. For example, in the works of Aristotle, he talks a lot about the common goods. In the dialogues of Plato, likewise. In the works which count volume on volume of Saint Augustine and the Church Fathers, they talk so much about that. In the ancient world of Virgil, Plotinus, the Summa of St. Thomas. But even in the world of art, the art of Fra Angelico, the art of the geniuses who are able to show us something more than we can physically see with our own two hands. Even today with the art of photography, photography can show you something more than what you see with your own eyes. In science, they become larger and more like their origin. They become more like God. And that is substance within itself. And we have to give them their recognition, because by giving them their recognition, then truly justice is there. One who truly loves other person wills that the others have what he has. For his love is pure and unmixed with inordinate self-love. He wills that others have more than he has himself. And so the good man wants to see the common good expand and enlarge and to reflect it back upon the person he loves. Take that and flip it around. When the person is selfish, they care that their world grows and everyone else's shrinks. And you can understand why that is so destructive. There's no growth there. There's death. There's desert. There's no fertile crescent. There's no fertile valleys. There's just rocks and dirt and sand. But the common good, no matter how large, is still not the perfect good. As they say in Latin, bonum universalis. The best that we will for those we love, God knows, man knows himself as good, but not as supreme good. Supreme good is God. Perfection of goodness and goodness without limits. Yet he recognizes that he and others like him are perpetually open to further perfections. And that's what we humans do. We further grow. In heaven, we will continually grow. And in continually growing, we'll become something more. God is goodness itself without limit. That's why God can create and create and create and never lose what he himself is. Because he has no limit. He is goodness. He is love. He is all these things. So when we think about justice, let's think about God, who is the just judge. And why is he just? Because he cares about the other. He makes the other because he loves the other. Because he loves good and hates evil. But evil is a non-existent. But we have to understand this point. And if we understand it, then truly we will be able to encompass it. And by encompassing it, we will be able to live it. And by living it, we will become indeed ourselves just people. This is why we're spending so much time on justice, because justice is looked upon in a harsh way. It's looked upon as a means or a way which is stiff, rigid, and is not linked in any way to love. But in truth, justice regulates love, helps us towards loving more truly, loving more deeply, loving more what we should be being. Love is a creative power of God, and in that we have our own being. It's not absent of it, but it's truly within it. So we understand that. and we can practice this virtue more often. We're going to start talking about the social justice element. We're going to go back from our break. So with that, we'll go to our break and be back in a quick moment's time.
You are listening to the Catechism Hour, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice, wherever you are. To contact us, you can tweet us at Radio Maria Can, or email catechismhour@radiomaria.ca.
Welcome back. Let's go into the other element of justice, which is more commonly understood within the umbrella of justice. Far less, unfortunately, than the spiritual, which is actually the higher form of justice. So we're going to look at disputative justice. So this is the element of social justice, in which it exists principally and primarily in those having charge over the commonwealth. And their kind of justice orders the relation between the social whole and the individual person. This type of justice is the virtue that inclines the will of those who hold political office to give to their citizens what is their due by proportional equity. It is a task of the public officials to give the common goods proportionately. To understand what we mean by proportionate or proportionate equality, consider the following thing. 2 is to 6, as 6 is to 12, as 12 is to 36. A strict proportionate equality is the following. If a person who earns 6 is taxed 2, then one who earns 36 should be taxed 12. Indeed, determining tax burdens via tax brackets is not necessarily a matter of imposing uniform ratio. Rather, a person who earns more will pay a higher percentage of taxes. The task of those who hold public office is to determine what is the just proportion. There's often social and economic variables which recommend a different ratio. A person who has a larger income ought to be taxed more. But exactly how much is difficult to determine and requires a great deal of prudence, which includes, amongst other things, understanding the economics of the moment, the ability to foresee consequences of certain decisions, a memory of what occurred as a result of past decisions, knowing your history. too great a tax burden on small businesses and corporations, for example, might very well be imprudent and lead to the decrease in production and higher unemployment, thus depleting the conditions to be conducive for a greater sharing of common goods. Vices contrary to this justice include respect for persons, which consists of giving the position or office of a person, not on the basis of their worthiness to hold the office, but on the basis of his person, that is, the irrelevant factors such as personal favors, friendships, feelings of preference, nepotism, is similar as favoritism. Any kind of unmerited advancement to a position that serves the common good, such as positions in education, military, business, municipal office, is a vice against this justice. We want a society in which people earn their way. You want someone in charge who knows what they're doing, not because he is the nephew of the local in charge of the community. You want that element to grow. The entire moral dynamic between the three kinds of justice, punitive, general legal, and distributive, are very much like a train, like a rain cycle of evaporation, condensation, precipitation, filtration, transpiration, perspiration, etc. The just person discovers himself by committing, in the spirit of sacrifice, to something larger than himself, the common good, evaporation. The holder of political office, if he is worthy of the office, must be a person of great justice and prudence. That is, a man or a woman of eminent integrity, condensation. Only then will the great conditions and total conditions enabling everyone to achieve human well-being be distributed proportionally to every member of the civil community. Reign. It is the possession of these common goods, the intellectual, spiritual, scientific, artistic, and literary heritage of civilization, that enriches the lives of human persons, conceiving within them the powerful eros that will inspire them to rise up and be part of that line and continue it to generously bring forth fruits of their labor. Where that turns out to be children of noble character, able to eventually assume public office and resist the temptations which patriarchy haunt those in office, or children who will make great teachers, or just and prudent court judges, musicians, poets, who will eventually make loving and down to the earth parents themselves, to our constantly rise up devout and faithful citizens of the church. Only the difference between the two cycles is that the human person have a destiny that rises above the state, to be perfect, eternal, infinite, good, and good to the common person, which cannot be lost. So we have this issue within society, and the church has taught this since. The one who put this to paper was St. Thomas Aquinas in his Summa. And if we understand that service is what is expected, when we say service, we mean true service, means that St. Thomas took it from the Republic, where he said that that the politicians should not be paid, that they should serve the community out of their own purse. And he said that way you only get the ones who want to sacrifice, not the ones who want to become rich. In our own country, we see that people who go into politics young with student debts, got some money, but not much. And then after their career is finished, they have multi-millions of dollars. It's very hard to believe that that was all gained truthfully, that there was no kickbacks along the way. So what are some of the virtues that are allied to justice? Justice has allies, and the allies are vindication. The unjust man loves his private good more than the good of anyone else, and he has no difficulty distributing the order of justice for the sake of himself. To destroy justice. Vindication's sounds very much like vindictive. Unfortunately, many people consider vindication to be exactly that, a form of revenge. But vindication is not revenge, nor does it describe a vindictive or vengeful will. Rather, it is a habit that belongs to one who loves justice. It is the virtue by which a person observes true measure in meting out punishment on the one who has committed a moral offense of some sort. Vindication wills punishment because the just man loves the order of justice, which exists for the sake of the common good of the whole society, which in turn is ordered to all human persons who belong to society. The unjust man loves his private good more than the good of anyone else, and he has no difficulty to disturb the order of justice for the sake of himself. The end justifies the means. It's all about me. It's all about me. That order consists of a fair and equitable distribution of benefits and burdens. Benefits and burdens. See, we in society, we also have to carry something. It isn't just one-sided. But the unjust man chooses not to exercise proper restraint for the sake of keeping. For the sake of keeping himself. So it's this amazing element that we keep going around and around in circles, and we see time and time again. The unjust does not properly exercise restraint. Why? Because he lacks the cardinal virtues. And in lacking the cardinal virtues, if you lack one, you lack them all. But the person instead pursues his own private interest, despite the fact that his actions increase the burden on others to carry, thus lessening their share and the benefits available to them, increasing his own. For example, let's just use an example here. Consider tax evasion. A person who fails to pay their fair share of taxes nevertheless reaps the benefits derived from the tax dollars, such as good roads, schools, medical care. If the tax evaders fulfill their obligation to the social whole, the tax burden on everyone else would be lighter, more equitable, all things considered. Vindication does not surrender to anger. Rather, anger is a proper emotion in response to injustice and ought to be moderated by meekness, not suppressed. Emotions perfected by the virtue is made to help in the execution of reason's demand. But only the just man experiences anger, the violation of justice and due order. The unjust is simply indifferent, except when the affront is personal. Some unjust individuals, even clever enough to hide their indifference, mask it with compassion, mercy, and patience. But a truly just man is prone to anger, for the most excellent in the person is, the most more prone the anger is. He wills punishment because punishment is good, for it aims to restore what is truly good, namely the order of fairness that is disturbed and disturbed by injustice of one who loves himself more than he loves the whole. Punishment restores the order by depriving the criminal of his ill-gotten advantage. Revenge, on the contrary, is the vice that seeks punishment not for the sake of restoring just order, but for the sake of satisfying feelings of anger and hostility. Let's look at something else. Liberality is the virtue by which one exercises proper stewardship over excess riches. It is the mean between covetousness in one hand and prodigality on the other. The just man recognizes the debt he owes to civil society, and he is the beneficiary of the generosity of countless others who have gone before him. He recognizes that not everything he has is strict in the result of his own efforts. He knows he's not self-sufficient, but dependent on many factors which entirely outside of his control. Why should he benefit from the generosity of a large multitude before him, the others that have come after him and do not benefit? A truly just man will use his excess wealth for good causes, for he moved to respond to those who suffer, to do his part creating conditions for the well-being. Frugality is the vice by which the person is inclined to use the excess wealth for himself, to gratify his passions. The result is that he takes no delight in virtue. The defect of liberality is covetousness, the inordinate love of possessing. Covetousness spawns a number of other vices against the commutative justice, such as fraud, insensibility to mercy, treachery, falsehood, perjury, violence, restlessness, murder, etc. Let's dig into fraud. Fraud is a type of deception employed to use and to cause a loss of some value to a person. One might sell a defective product without letting the buyer know, or sell a product without any sort of discount, while allowing him to believe the product is worth more, much more than it actually is. Selling a person short is fraudulent. For example, selling a person 11 bagels and charging him for 12. Deceptive advertising is fraudulent. For example, advertising a school as Catholic, naming it after a saint, and then proceeding to teach a personal agenda that is inconsistent with the formulated teachings of the Catholic Church is deceptive. Like all these incidents of fraud, violates the requirement not to do to another what one would not like done to oneself. Insensibility to mercy describes the depletion of empathy, a hardening of heart. As we said above, love expands itself in that one who loves another as another loves self becomes the other. But covetousness has an inordinate self-love. Consequently, they are not able to empathize, to feel that another is feeling. They cannot sympathize. They cannot suffer at seeing others suffer. In fact, they delight in it. At this point, self-love moves to another level, a more pathological level involving narcissistic envy. Envy delights in the misfortune of others, for their misfortunes provide the envious man an opportunity to rationalize the sense of superiority over the unfortunate, to believe the fate has favored him by reason of some superior quality in him. The misfortunes of others may also provide the narcissistic with an opportunity to come to the rescue and save the day in order to appear sympathetic and compassionate. In order, he is nothing short of, he has no heart. Others are not equal, have value insofar as they serve him. We see this particularly evident in our generation that has come up in the last years, the millennial and post-millennial, where everything's about themselves, but it's not even that. It's a narcissistic circle, which goes smaller and smaller. But you see that we lack the openness, the generosity to give of oneself. When it's all about self, there's not much else there. So we're continuing our tour of justice, and we're not done yet. We're not done. And we will next week continue in justice, and we will look at falsehood and deceit, and we'll continue digging in. Hopefully you find this interesting. And we will find where we can solution ourselves. So with that, we're going to ask God to bless us, and we'll see you back next week. God bless.
You've been listening to the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.